The crew all season long on WTMJ. It's Brewers Extra Innings. Now, live from American Family Field, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Okay, it's a little funk. Brewers come back home, and not a great one tonight. 7-3 the final. There was a mix of really great stuff from Joe Ross, some bad luck, bat-to-ball ability from the Padres, and just a seven-pitch span of defensive lapse that was the difference of the game, but also the Brewers had some opportunities that they could not cash in. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for joining us here tonight. We're going to the top of the hour. Craig Gashon is going to join us a little bit later here on the program as well. Brewers fall 7-3. They had a 3-0 lead in this game and allowed seven unanswered to the Padres, six of those in the big, disastrous, ugly fifth inning. We'll break that inning down a little bit later as well. If you want to join the program, the number is 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Give us a text, give us a call. I'd love to hear from you tonight as we break down this fifth loss of the season. The Brewers are now 10-5 on the young season. Let's get the three important plays from this one. As I said, the Brewers are out to a 3-0 lead. In fact, they once again scored in the first inning. Three of the first four batters in this game reached, and it was highlighted by Willy Adames yanking one for a single.
Bouncer hit towards the hole in the left field, a base hit. Chorio around third, he's going to score easily, and the Brewers have the lead.
Bob Uecker on the call here on WTMJ. There is something I want to monitor with Willy Adames, and we'll get into that a little bit later on to the program about his offensive profile this year. The Brewers had a chance to add on, though. They had the bases loaded and only one out for Bryce Terang. And this was my important play, the fact that he grounded into a double play on a 1-2 pitch. And it was jam shot, and it was right next to the bag at second. You may be thinking, well, isn't Bryce fast enough to normally beat out a double play ball? Yes, but it was perfectly placed for Ha-Seong Kim to turn it pretty easily and end the frame. So the Brewers get one. But they made sure to re-engage in the second inning. A significant play in this frame, though, is the fact that on a hit and run, or just a run and hit, if you will, where the green light was on and Ortiz got a pitch to hit, Blake Perkins was trying to steal second. Ortiz went through the right side for a base hit, and Perkins got deked by Xander Bogaerts placing a fake tag on him. And just that little deke and him going to a slide before getting back up and trying to race for third was the difference of Fernando Tatis Jr. throwing him out from right field. Fernando's got the best arm of any outfielder, in my opinion, in baseball. Of course, he was an ex-shortstop. He throws out Blake Perkins at third, so it's just a man on first and two outs. But Jackson Chourio, on a 1-2 pitch, make sure to get some action in this one.
The pitch. Hit to left. Deep. Warning track. At the wall. The top of the fence and kept on going. It didn't come back our way. It went the other way.
Jackson's third home run of the season. That made it 3-0 Brewers. And you're feeling good because Joe Ross was on a roll at this point. He retired the first three innings with only just two base runners on a couple of bloops. At that point, he only had 31 pitches through three innings. Then the walk in the fourth, a leadoff walk, always comes around to bite you. It came in to score on an RBI fielder's choice when the Brewers failed to turn a double play in the fourth inning. Then the fifth is when the wheels really came off. But it wasn't really anything hit all that hard. Tyler Wade hit a clean single in the right field for a base hit, but that came with two strikes. Then a stoink from Xander Bogaerts loaded the bases. Tatis Jr. grounded out on the first pitch he saw, so you're thinking, okay, well, there's one out, but it's still second and third and one out. Then the chaos began. Jake Cronenworth reaches on a catcher's interference that Pat Murphy is not happy with because he felt that William Contreras had already caught the baseball, and then Cronenworth decided to swing. He understands it's the rule, but that needs to be changed, in his opinion. Quite frankly, I agree. I don't know what William was supposed to do there, but that's the rule. It's catcher's interference, and it wasn't the worst thing in the world because it loaded the bases. The problem is the pitch before that was a pass ball. It got by William Contreras and allowed the tying run to score at the time, 3-3. Now Cronenworth is aboard. You've got runners on first and second, first and third, and Machado coming to the plate, and it was almost an all-time highlight, but instead it was a moment of, oh, what happened?
And now the pitch. Machado bounces one up the middle, and the flip backhanded style from Terang to Willie Adames, covering at second, was wide of Adames. That was the only play for Terang. That was the only way he could handle it. He made a backhanded play on the ball and then flipped it behind his back to Willie Adames covering, and it was a little wide.
And more than a little wide, and that was a big play. Technically goes down as a base hit, and the run scores, and that had made it 4-3, and then the Padres never looked back from there. The biggest play in that frame, though, in my opinion, was a 3-2 pitch to Ha-Seong Kim with two outs that could have ended the inning there on a 4-3 score, but instead, pitch timer violation on Joe Ross made it a walk, so that reloaded the bases with two outs, and then Jackson Merrill hit a bloop single. That scored two runs. Luis Campusano hit a bloop single. That scored another run, and all of a sudden, a six-run frame with nothing hit relatively hard or anything. As Pat Murphy put it, you know, they failed Joe Ross more than Joe Ross pitched poorly. This was a weird defensive inning. And the Padres never looked back 7-3. Yes, the Brewers loaded the bases in the ninth, but nothing really came of that either. Sal Frelick flew out to end the game. So those are the most important plays, in my opinion. Let me get to a few texts here as well. That game changed on a dime. Some bad luck. And once again, just leave Churio leading off. Seems like he's more comfortable there. That one from Doug. He certainly did change very quickly. David and Superior, the Brewers certainly showed their human side tonight, but to keep it positive, how about four scoreless innings from the bullpen, and congrats to Jared Koenig to become Brewer number 1,000. So thanks to that text there, David, up north. Joe Ross pitched quick and up-tempo during the first two innings, then reverted back to draining the pitch clock, and that's when his struggles began. I know that his last start, he was taking his time, so it might not be related, but it's just something I noticed. That one from Justin in Sun Prairie. When it comes to Joe Ross, a big thing to remember, you know, he got a little bit of exposure to the pitch clock last season while rehabbing for Tommy John surgery in AAA, but, I mean, those were on, like, one-inning spurts, and you make the adjustment. Also, it was 20 seconds with men on base, not 18 seconds, and he's still learning how to deal with it. He generally takes it pretty far down every time. And he's a veteran. He's going to learn. It's going to figure out. He learned the hard way today. His reaction, I think, just told me everything I need to know. Just, he knows it's a point of emphasis. He knows he needs to work on it and be a little bit quicker to give himself some time. And he just lost track of it in the biggest moment of the game. And it obviously led to a snowball. Just keep on getting bigger, rolling down the mountain. But it's... when it's going well, you don't even notice. When all of a sudden an inning like the fifth inning happens, you're like, wait a minute, he's taking way too much time, so I'm not going to overread it. We'll see if this becomes a trend, though, for Joe Ross. 855-616-1620 or on Twitter at Dom_Cutronio. You can join us all season long here on WTMJ. Also want to thank Fifth Third Bank for presenting sponsor all season long here of Brewers Extra Innings. With a local Milwaukee team, Fifth Third Bank also knows how to hit it out of the park. They've been serving businesses in the area for nearly 15 years, offering industry-specific expertise and local decision-making capabilities to help your business succeed. This is commercial banking value that only Fifth Third can deliver. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, member FDIC. Take a breather. Craig is getting ready to join us in just a little bit. We'll also go down the box score as well. Brewers fall by a 7-3 final in Game 1 of the series with the Padres. Back with more after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Brewers fall 7-3 to the Padres. Joe Musgrove, he earns the win. Joe Ross in the loss in the Battle of the Joes. I'm Dominic Cutronio. Craig Kishon is going to join us here now on WTMJ, breaking down this loss for the Brewers. For me, Joe Musgrove pitched fine. It looked like he wasn't going to have his A game. He did walk four and only strike out three, but kudos to him because after that third inning, he did not allow a hit for the rest of his contest. He allowed a leadoff single by Sal Frelick on a blooper. Then everything else was walks. No other base hits for him. He looked like a veteran who righted the ship, and he got a gift from the Brewers' defense in the fifth, and you know what? That's the way baseball goes sometimes.
Well, it does, and like you're saying, like he's a veteran, and I think the thing about this, Dom, is, you know, veteran pitchers, a lot of times the runs that they give up in a game, if they give up, you know, any, are going to be early, And he was able to shut the door after that second inning. And he did a really nice job. The Brewers just simply couldn't take advantage. In fact, when you just look at the, you know, the Brewers in this one, it was pretty much all Jackson Churio coming through with, you know, a lot of the offense here. The two-run home run, he got the scoring, you know, going with that leadoff single in the first inning, scoring the first run as well. And then after that, it was pretty quiet, and it got even more quiet as the game went on. But, you know, I'm looking at a veteran pitcher. I'm not saying he's Corbin Burnes, don't get me wrong, but, you know, Corbin Burnes kind of did this same thing to the Brewers, you know, in yesterday's game. They had some traffic, but they weren't able to come through with that the clutch hit. Not the same way we've been seeing, you know, all those runners in scoring position numbers just were so out of whack good that you knew it was going to eventually come down.
And it's starting to come down. And, again, this was expected to a certain degree. So when you include yesterday's 2-for-17 and tonight's 4-for-14, you do the math, that's 6 for their last 31 with runners in scoring position over these last two games. I don't think this is going to be a trend that sticks around. It's just a little mini funk and coming back down to the mean. I mean, when you think about it, first and foremost, currently there are only 5 teams even hitting over 500 with runners, or excuse me, over 300 with runners in scoring position. And, of course, the Brewers are one of them, and yet the Brewers are still hitting over 358 and leading baseball with runners in scoring position. So that's just another reminder of how freakish and unsustainable the start was for the Brewers with runners in scoring position. And, yes, they're coming back down to earth a little bit. It won't come crashing all the way down to zero, I promise you that. And the Brewers, they know what it feels like when they're all getting the hits. There's no reason to be that alarmed right now with their wrist issues the last 2 days.
I think the one thing that I'm encouraged about with their offensive approach is the fact that they're getting on and they're getting so many opportunities. I mean, in the last 2 days, you're talking about 31 opportunities to hit with a runner in scoring position. I mean, last year and the year before that, we're talking about it would have been an entire week's worth of games, it seems like. Last year the Brewers hit pretty well with runners in scoring position. I think they were, what, weren't they fourth in the league? But their opportunities per game certainly are nowhere close to what we're seeing now. I mean, I don't have fact numbers in front of me like you do, Dom, but it sure seems to be that way. You know, I mean, it just seems like the opportunities we're seeing right now early in the season are off the charts, and they've come through at times really well. And then games like this, they're still look how the game ended. Bases loaded, you got the tying run at the plate. You just never know what's going to happen with one swing of the bat. They were right there until the final pitch of the game as well before they dropped this one.
Yeah, when you look at it last season, the Brewers across all of baseball, they were eighth in batting average with runners in scoring position at .269. I mean, last year's league average for runners in scoring position was .256. Just a reminder, still, they're 100 points above league average. This is not going to last all season long, but it's certainly encouraging to see what they've been doing. Let's talk about Jackson, though. Let's get to a positive before in the next segment we break down what the heck happened in that fifth inning. The Churio today, after a really rough road trip, it was not a good road trip for him, especially in Baltimore. I wonder if, and this is me speculating, you know, you face Ellie in Cincinnati, and he was crowned as the next greatest thing, sliced bread, all that last year, and he started to wake up against the Brewers. Then you have to deal with the Jackson Holiday, the Jackson and Jackson Circus. Like, they had the guys dress out in uniform on Friday night and, like, come out and post for some photos together like it's 1925, and it just didn't sit right with me. I get it. We're trying to market the superstars, and now you got to deal with the Jackson Merrill stuff here, the Jackson and Jackson thing. I think he just wants to get back to playing ball. You know, I think he's kind of getting sick of all the distractions of being the guy and being the kid in the big leagues. And today was the first day he came back home. There weren't any crazy requests for him. And boom, he gets a couple of knocks, including his third homer.
Yeah, I just, you know, look at what Jackson Churio has done and just the way he's handled everything. I think another really encouraging perspective from where he is just turning 20 and the expectations that are instantly placed on somebody who has all this potential. And we know about the contract. I mean, that's added into it to a certain extent as well. But I think just being with the club this weekend in Baltimore, Dom, and just talking to, you know, some of the coaching staff and some of the veteran guys, I think they're I don't want to say going out of their way, but they're clearly making sure that his support system within that clubhouse is strong. And what are those examples? I can't give you a ton of examples other than the fact that this is the word coming out of that clubhouse, that they're taking care of him in a way that they know needs to be done. And I'm talking strictly from a support standpoint. And so I think that could be a clear example. He hasn't had, you know, a real downer time or really bad at bats yet. He, you know, like you said, on this road trip, not overly productive. I think he said at least one game in Baltimore. I'm not sure, can't remember about Cincinnati, but to be able to bounce right back here at home, he's coming along at a really, really nice pace here right now. And I still say, anytime you can compare him to what Robin Yount did in his first season, Robin Yount, I don't think is that first season is going to be comparable numbers. I think Jackson Chourio is going to have more veteran-like numbers than rookie-like numbers before it's all over.
And to be fair to Robin, the game's played a little bit differently now.
Yeah.
And just like
yeah.
It, you know, I don't know
yeah.
if Jackson would be successful in Robin's era, and Robin, I'm sure, would be successful in today's era because he put bat to ball, but it was just different priorities. Like today, the note was 3 homers in his first 13 games. Nobody has done that as young as Jackson as Robin Yount. So that's yeah. always going to be a name yeah. you hear whenever we're talking about this first season, and just kind of get used to it and let the kid become his own. I was really happy with what we saw from him today, and the fact that all 3 homers are on off-speed secondary pitches is certainly significant, because that's how these pitchers think they can get him out, and he's already proving, no, yeah, give me the fastball, and that can certainly help his development moving forward.
Yeah.
855, yeah, go for it.
No, I was just going to say all those are really good points, because that, to me, that's what, you know, we see these veteran guys, you know, we've said it, you know, with a guy like Rhys Hoskins, a professional hitter. You can see where Jackson Chourio is going to go and become a professional hitter sooner than later, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he almost, you know, hit a 2-homer game and just kind of flipped
right.
one to right field. And Tatis obviously tracked it down on the warning track. But like, he didn't get all of that, but it still carried all the way to the wall. He's 20 years old. He's 20, and he's just flicking, and it's carrying. It's like, what's it going to be when he actually grows into his body? I mean, you and I remember when we were 20 years old. We weren't done. Like, he ain't done either. So this is going to be fun to watch his development all season long. It's not all sunshine and lollipops right now, though. We do got to break down what the heck happened in that 5th inning. So let's talk about that coming up next. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. You're listening to Brewers Extra Innings on your home of the Brewer, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. Brewers Extra Innings. Brewers fall 7-3 tonight. Want to remind you that Brewers Extra Innings is also brought to you by Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. Summer's right around the corner, and now through June 15th, Sider is offering $1,500 off of Central Air Systems. You can schedule an appointment today at Sider.com, Sider.com. Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical. With Craig Kishon, let's talk about the 5th, because Joe Ross was rolling by all accounts, and then a leadoff walk in the 4th, came around to score, but he got out of the inning without any further damage. And then the 8 hitter in the order, Luis Campusano, perfectly placed the ball, seeing eye single through the left side. Tyler Wade lines one in the right field, and all of a sudden, you know, you got 2 on, nobody out, top of the order coming up, and still only a 3-1 game. The Brewers were failing to add on today. But you look at it, bloop, ground out RBI, pass ball, catcher's interference, behind-the-back failure up the middle, strikeout, pitch timer walk, bloop, 2-run single, bloop, RBI single, and you blink, and all of a sudden it's 6-3, or 7-3. I mean, there was nothing hit hard, almost, I mean, nothing got behind the outfielders. It was just a weird, weird, weird inning.
Yeah, I mean, I could take six singles. I mean, I get it. It's not even small ball. I mean, it's just contact. And, okay, maybe that's obviously part of their game, and then they can hit some home runs. But, I mean, it was nothing like that. I mean, my gosh, they only had one extra base hit, and that came late in the game after it was pretty much decided anyway. But, you know, the catcher's interference thing, too, was – really bizarre, because what was that on strike three? And you know, you end up not getting the out. I mean, if you do, I mean, that completely changes that inning as well. But you're right, a little bit of everything, even desperation with that behind the back move that Terang tried to make on that hit up the middle, trying to get an out even. And you know, he's, you know, inches away from connecting on that too. So, I don't know. It's one of those where all you can say is that's baseball, man. Cause I don't know of any other sport where things like that can just all of a sudden just happen so quickly when you need something to change and go your way. But in baseball, you need it to happen, you know, when you're out on the field three times. And, it seemed like it was, you know, eight outs in that inning for the Padres. So crazy stuff.
I mean, for Fernando Tatis Jr., one of the best hitters in the game and always going to strike fear into your opponent, you got him to swing at the first pitch with the bases loaded, and he hit a little dribbler to the second baseman at 52 miles an hour off the bat. Obviously, it scored a run, but it's like, you take that. You think, all right, cool. The best they can probably do now is, you know, a second and third and one out, the run expectancy is still a run. So it's like, all right, so the worst thing that's going to happen here is this game's probably going to be tied, and then we'll cut our losses and move on. And that obviously didn't happen. In defense of William, like you said, it would have been strike three. It was in the mitt. Pat Murphy didn't like the call, but he understands the rule. I see a guy, I mean, the pass ball, there's a reason why we keep track of him. He's human. He made the mistake. He knows it. Wear it off, shake it off. But to me, in defense of Bryce Terang, on the decision to go behind the back here, it's Manny Machado running. He's not the fastest guy on the planet. But at the point of Terang fielding this baseball, to paint the picture, he's to the left, if you're behind home, to the left of second base, on the shortstop side of second base, making a backhand. Willie Adames is on the same page. He is going straight to the back to cover for Terang because he was playing Machado to pull. Look, if that play gets pulled off, it's maybe the double play of the year. And obviously it wasn't pulled off. You have to make a risky play to try to do something crazy. They maybe would have only got one out in the frame, but a run was going to score regardless. And I'm okay with Terang making that risk.
Absolutely. I mean, this is why this defense is so good. I mean, the fact that they didn't make that happen is just an example of, yes, maybe it's a bit of a risk, but it's really not, because if you just hold the ball and eat it, all right, run's going to score anyway. You're not getting any outs. So all of that happened anyway. But the fact that this club is playing such good defense and their chemistry out there is so good. They know that they're going to pull that play off at some point. Something like that is going to happen, and it's probably going to happen multiple times before the end of the year with that great up-the-middle defense that they have. So I have, like, no problem with that. I mean, to me, that's not an error at all. That's just a great effort, and sometimes great efforts don't work, don't turn into outs when you're out in the field.
I mean, quite frankly, I don't know if more than like 4 or 5 second basemen even get to that ball. Honestly.
Yeah,
it's a good
point. Yeah.
It would have scored two runs if he doesn't at least put a glove on it. But I get it. People are frustrated. Why are you doing that in that situation? That's such a big moment. Like, look, you got to try to do something, because a run was going to score regardless. They probably weren't going to double up Manny, but you might as well try. And even yet, it's still super awkward for him to have all his momentum to left to turn around and try to throw to first. That's no guarantee. Turn around and try to shovel a ball off your falling off to Willie, who's moving away from you. It was a weird play, and weird plays tend to happen, and it's no big deal. As for Joe Ross, I'm sure he's feeling really frustrated about how the inning went, but the one thing that he could control was being aware of the pitch clock. And we have to remind ourselves, this dude hasn't pitched in 2 years. This is all brand new to him right now, and he got burned by taking it a little too late.
Yeah, that was a tough one, because I honestly don't remember a situation. And I'm certain there have been, but not many at all since this pitch clock was implemented at this level, where you look at that and that turns into a walk. And then Kim, you know, winds up scoring later in the inning as well. I mean, just such an important time, whether it was going to be ball four anyway or not, but just not even being able to get the pitch off, to have the opportunity to get the out is a really, really just tough luck there. And, you know, you're right. He's not all the way used to the pitch clock yet, but that one, that'll stick in his craw for a while, and you'll probably never see him make that mistake again.
I agree with that, and it's something for him to continue to adjust to. Tomorrow, it'll be Wade Miley on the mound against Dylan Cease. Should be a fun matchup. I'm going to reserve judgment. You know, Angel Hernandez is behind the plates. Give him a chance.
Uh-oh.
Could be something to monitor, but we're gonna see. We're going to see what happens, and we'll be chatting with you again after the game tomorrow as well. Craig Kishon joining us here on WTMJ. Appreciate you as always, my friend, and go get some rest.
All right, we'll do. Thanks, Dom.
Awesome. Craig Kishon here on WTMJ. I've got a mind-blowing stat for you coming up next as we continue to roll on. We're about halfway through our program here tonight, going to the top of the hour on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Dom Catronio here. What's left here in the program? I'm going to give you a mind-blowing stat, talk a little bit more about the offense and a trend I see with Willy Adames. Also want to hear from Pat Murphy, hear his comments here shortly. We'll get a couple of highlights in as well, and then we'll preview tomorrow's contest. So let me give you the stat here that I teased you with. Jackson Chourio tonight, home run and a stolen base. The list of players to have both of those happen in a game as young as Jackson, 20 years and 35 days or younger. Here's the last five guys to do it. Bryce Harper, Jose Reyes, Andrew Jones, Alex Rodriguez. Those are the last five guys to do it. Let's go a little deeper. Ken Griffey Jr., Robin Yao, Al Kaline, Mickey Mantle, Del Crandall, Buddy Lewis, Phil Cavaretta. You get where I'm getting at here? We're talking some old-time legends here as the later names, and then we're talking Mickey Mantle. We're talking Robin. We're talking the Kid. We're talking A-Rod. That's some really good company for Jackson Chourio tonight. Again, a homer and a stolen base in the same game, being 20 years and 35 days or younger. So Robin did it once when he was 19 years old, nearing 20 years old. He was about 2 weeks away from his 20th birthday in 1975. Of course, Jackson is about a little more than a month past his 20th birthday. Still impressive. Can't even go get a Miller Lite to celebrate with it. But hey, really, really impressive stuff from what I've been seeing from Jackson Chourio. Let me give you the trend that I've been noticing from Willy Adames. Now, Willy tonight, nothing crazy to write home about. He finishes 1-for-2, an RBI single in the first, a pair of walks, and a ground out to short. So far this year, his year-over-year strikeout rate and whiff rates, they're a slight improvement from last season. Like, so his strikeout rate has been much better so far this year in the small sample size. His whiff rate has also improved. It's virtually doubled as far as getting better in percentile rankings. 18th percentile last year, 35th percentile so far this year. And his chase rate is the best it's been since his rookie year in 2019. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on. But the last thing that really has caught my eye about Willy Adames, if you go look at his spray chart on Baseball Savant, everything is to the left of second except for two dots. A single to right and the opposite field home run he hit to open the season. He is pulling the ball with authority. In fact, 52% of balls in play have been to the pull side for him, which is the highest rate of his career. I don't know if that's going to stick around. To be fair, he has been doing damage to the pull side. And if that's what's going to make him more successful, more power to him. But I wonder when pitchers are going to start catching on and start peppering him away and see what we can do with those pitches. That's something I'd certainly want to keep an eye on. His swing percentage by zone, his batted balls, like if you go into Savant here and just be a nerd like me, you see a lot of down the middle. He doesn't miss anything down the middle. He doesn't really like anything elevated either. But he just has one glaring red spot on his chart, and that is down and away. Down and away. Down and away. That is what he is going to be seeing for the rest of the season, I imagine, as he continues to pull the baseball until he makes the adjustment. So that's just a couple of notes that caught my eye when it comes to Willy Adames and making sure that he continues to have a great free agency season. Of course, his final year under team control, and then decide what's going to happen after that. The Brewers certainly love having him in the four spot, but part of the reason what makes him so successful in the four spot is because he's normally in the rocking chair. And this is not meant to be a slight to Sal Frelick, but he would agree with what I'm about to say. Sal Frelick is not a healthy Christian Yelich. And if you have a healthy Christian Yelich in the three spot, Willy Adames in the four spot, Rhys Hoskins in the five spot, pick your poison. You know, those are three elite hitters. Oh, then by the way, you could put Sal right behind Rhys. And that's a really darn good stretch of the lineup. And they were having a lot of success with that in Cincinnati. Before Yelly got hurt, they had a lot of success with that here over the weekend. Last weekend against the Mariners, I think that is the ideal lineup for the Brewers. But a couple of injury updates today real quick here. They will make the decision on Christian Yelich tomorrow, since you only get 3 days to decide retroactivity to put a guy on the injured list, meaning they could put Yelly on the injured list on Saturday, even though it was passed 3 days ago. They have to make that decision tomorrow if they're going to put him on the injured list and call somebody else up here to the big leagues. Furthermore, that would mean 10 days on the IL minimum, which would mean he would skip the Cardinals series this weekend, he would skip the Pirates series next week, and then be eligible to come back the very end of that Yankees series this next weekend if he only needs the minimum stay on the IL. So that's all to be figured out for him. The Brewers are also going to check out William Contreras after he had that tumble in the ninth inning, beating out the infield single. Tumbling with Brett Sullivan at first base. He was kind of grabbing at his back. Hopefully that's nothing major, but they're going to check that out tomorrow as well. JB Bukauskas, MRI, came back. It's not so much a lat strain for him, but rather something more in the triceps region and not as severe as they thought it could have been. So that's certainly good news for JB, something he has dealt with before. And Trevor McGill should be back soon. They didn't want to put a firm date on it, but Trevor McGill is due back soon, making sure his concussion symptoms have subsided from the 7-day IL, and he could be back and really be a boost for this Brewers bullpen. Let's hear from the skipper coming up next. Take a breather and come back with more Brewers extra innings after a 7-3 loss to the Padres here on 620 WTMJ.
Now, more Brewers extra innings presented by Fifth Third Bank on WTMJ.
Brewers fall 7-3. I'm Dom Catronio. Not much really to write home about today, but we'll have some highlights coming up in the next segment. Let's hear from the skipper, Pat Murphy, what he felt about Joe Ross, the game in its entirety, as they've dropped back-to-back games for the first time this year, believe it or not. They're now 10-5. Here's the skipper, Pat Murphy.
I mean, it's not Joe Ross. He didn't do anything wrong. You know, pitch clock violation might be the one thing he did wrong in the inning, but after 28 pitches in the inning, and I mean, it was not Joe Ross. I mean, we had an infield hit and a strikeout and then a walk and then a jam shot hit and a blooper. And I think there's a catcher's interference in there after the strike. He had caught the pitch and then it hit. But that is the rule. It's not a great rule, and they're going to change it at some point, I'm sure. But it is technically the rule. Even though he caught the ball already, and then the bat hit it for strike three. But in fact, that's just the way the game goes. And then we had a couple other things, balls not caught that got lost in the lights or whatever. It just seemed like a snake bit inning, and we still had a chance to win. So proud our guys didn't give up. Give the Padres credit for taking that long trip and getting here at 6 a.m. and coming out with their A group. And yeah, we didn't put them away. We had a chance to put them away early, and we didn't, and it's credit to them. And, Musgrove hung in there, and he could have broke, and he didn't. He hung in there and gave them five or six, and that was his job. And he had a lot going on, and a couple key plays there that kept us, you know, Perkins was stealing a base, and Joey hit one behind him, run and hit, and they did a good job of deking him. He slid in there at second, and then got thrown out of third. It's a tough one. But, yeah, I'm pleased the way we competed. That's all we can ask for every night.
Kerr, how unusual was that pass ball by Williams? Like, part of that inning, too, it's kind of sort of started there.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. You know, Williams has been so good, and the ball was not exactly a strike, but I think the ball got away from Joe and kind of takes off, you know, took off when a guy's throwing 95 miles an hour sometimes and slider backs up or doesn't do what you think it's doing. It, you know, there's a lapse there for a second, but William catches that ball most of the time. He's, you know, it could happen to any catcher on that pitch in the game. So I can live with that. It happens from time to time. I think it's probably his first one and probably won't have another one for a long time, but yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, guys. I'll tell you, I was sick the way that happened, just because Ross is throwing a ball so well, you know. And we had an inning like that with Freddie, if you remember, earlier in the season. We're only 10 games in or whatever we are, and we had an inning like that with Freddie where it's just ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, and we just didn't seem like it ever went to us. But this was more, you know, broken bat hit, bloop hit, infield hit, walk. You know, then the error up the middle on the double play ball, that would have been a tough turn, but it's an out, and the innings doesn't go as far. So, yeah, live with it. Live with it and learn from it. And, you know, their pitching staff did a good job keeping us down. So,
Murph, Joe's velocity on his sinker was up over 97 today. Is his stuff starting to look more like
– Ooh. You know, he showed that. He flashed that last game too. But yeah. This is the guy we're getting, and it doesn't. The line doesn't look good, and you know a lot of people don't understand that when you look at the box score or you go to the game, you're like, wow, he gave up 7 runs. Wow, he didn't. You know, like we did. And
all right,
and
10. Here we go.
The game dealt us that, but Joe was very, very good.
That's what Pat Murphy had to say earlier this evening after the 7-3 loss. Well, we'll get a couple of highlights. There were some positive moments in this one. Stay with us after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ. Ready for this?
Get up!
This?
Get up!
And this?
Get out of here!
Time for tonight's highlights. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Brewers back home for a quick 3-game set with the San Diego Padres. Into the Battle of the Joes on the mound. Joe Musgrove for San Diego, and Joe Ross for the Brewers. Ross got off to a good start, but that would change later. The Brewers' offense got off to a good start. That also would change later. In the first inning, though, it was Willy Adames coming through.
Bouncer hit towards the hole in the left field of base hit. Curiel around third. He's going to score easily, and the Brewers have the lead.
The Brewers, in fact, would load the bases in the first after that RBI single, but failed to push anything else across. But then in the second inning, with 2 outs and 2 strikes on him, the Wonder Kid strikes again.
Pitch. Hit to left. Deep. Warning track. At the wall. And it is gone. Jackson Chorio just hit one out of here. It hit the top of the fence. Kept on going. It didn't come back our way. It went the other way.
Bob Uecker on the call here on WTMJ. All 3 of Jackson's young home runs this season have been here at home, and all of them have been on secondary offerings. So the Brewers in control, 3-0. Joe Ross, through 3 innings, had only 31 pitches to his ledger, had only allowed 2 hits. In fact, he'd only thrown 6 pitches out of the zone. But then things would quickly change. In the 4th, a leadoff walk would come around to score on an RBI fielder's choice from Ha-Sung Kim, beating out a double play ball. But then in the 5th, the wheels would fall off for the Brewers. An infield hit, seeing eye single by Luis Campusano. A line drive single on the right, the only well-struck ball of the inning by Tyler Wade. 1st and 2nd, nobody out. Then a bloop single by Xander Bogaerts. That loaded the bases. Fernando Tatis Jr. swung at the first pitch he saw and bounced out. However, it did score a run. 2nd and 3rd, 1 out, Jake Cronenworth at the plate. But a pass ball allowed a run to score and get a runner to 3rd. Then on the next pitch, Cronenworth reaches on a controversial catcher interference. The next batter to the Boo Birds was Manny Machado, and the Brewers try to do a little razzle-dazzle.
And now the pitch. Machado bounces one up the middle, and the flip backhanded style from Terang to Willy Adames, covering at 2nd, was wide of Adames. That was the only play for Terang. That was the only way he could handle it.
That was an unfortunate gamble. It did not pay off. That gave the Padres the lead 4-3. But then next batter struck out. He had a chance to get out of the inning with Haseon Kim, but a pitch timer violation for a walk. Reloaded the bases, and then the floodgates opened.
Soft little drive into left center. He's going to drop for a base hit. Two more runs are going to score for the Padres. Cronenworth and Machado are in. And they've scored runs numbers 4 and 5 here in the inning. It's 6-3 Padres.
I mean, it happened in the blink of an eye. They would end up scoring 7 unanswered as this one goes by the way of the Padres. It's the first time all year the Brewers have lost back-to-back games, but they're back at it tomorrow, and we'll preview it coming up next as the Brewers fall 7-3. Back after this on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
All right, tomorrow, game 2 of this series. Brewers try to get back on track. Good pitching matchup. Dylan Cease off to a good start in his Padres career against Wade Miley. Again, same time, same place, 6:40 first pitch. Our coverage will begin shortly after 6 right here in your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ, with network coverage taking you all the way up to first pitch. And then I'll be with you after the game for Brewers extra innings. Cease this year, 1-1, 2.16 ERA. He's got 20 Ks in 16 2/3 innings. And Wade Miley returned from the injured list this past week against the Cincinnati Reds. 4 innings, 1 hit, 1 run was earned. 2 walks, no strikeouts. He also hit a batter, but he pitched great as he was on a very strict pitch limit in that game. I imagine he only threw 52 pitches in his last start. I wonder if this is going to balloon maybe closer to the 70 range and the up-downs and continuing to increase that. The Brewers won that game 7-2. Quick look around scores in baseball as we wind down on the program here. The Brewers are watching out west as the Cardinals are in the bottom of the ninth against the A's. Cardinals lead 3-1 out there. Other scores in the Central, Pirates lost again today. They fall to the Mets 6-3 in Queens. Also today, the Reds, they are playing right now, but getting beat up by the Seattle Mariners 9-3 up in the Pacific Northwest. And the Cubs are losing. Cubs are losing 2-1 to the Diamondbacks in the bottom of the eighth inning. So the Cardinals, at this rate, might be the only team that wins tonight. Like I said, same time, same place tomorrow. We hope you can join us here on WTMJ. It was good to have Uke back here on the radio today as well. Then an earlier start on Wednesday. It is a 12:10 first pitch. Coverage will begin shortly after 11:30 here on the network. My thanks to Matt Yazel, our producer here tonight. Also to Craig Kishon for joining us. I'm Dom Catronio. Brewers fall 7-3. Until next time, keep on swinging.